Megan, if you had to make a weapon to use in the Aether Revolt, what weapon would you make?
I would make a gremlin in a jar.
Gremlin grenade?
Yeah.
I would make an Aether toilet.
Why?
Because when you sit on it, it doesn't flush. It shoots Aether up your butt and you shoot into the air.
I mean,
it's not a good
weapon.
It's
practical. Like, we forget that even in a war, people need to use the bathroom.
So true.
My question is, are they going to take the time to find a toilet?
Great point. It's just, you know, I'm just on the drawing board.
On the other hand, I mean, if you like really conveniently place them, then the answer will be yes.
So porta potties.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you're making an Aether porta potty.
An Aether bomb porta potty. I shouldn't say bomb. It's a lot more friendly than that. You just go for a little bit of an Aether ride. In a way you really don't want to.
I'm never gonna
go in a porta potty.
I'm never going in a porta potty again. I was already trying to avoid them.
Yeah.
As are we all.
We all are.
But I'm going to go more out of my way to not see one ever again.
Oh, I hope all of you out there had fun because the revolt has begun, Megan.
Yeah, it has.
It's begun and we're all participating.
Okay, important question. Do you think they're going to win?
That is a good question. We only have two sets now to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. So?
So are they?
What do you think?
Okay, let me think. I actually hadn't thought about this. I'm going to say no.
No.
The reason I'm saying no is because the next set after the set is Amonkhet, and we're going to go and visit Nicol Bolas. And we had kind of a little preview of something Nicol Bolas-y in, which card is it?
Dark Intimations.
Yes. So part of me thinks that something bad's going to happen and Tezzeret's going to leave successful with Nicol and go over to Egypt land.
So you're not saying that it's not the consulate who's going to be successful though.
Oh, right. Correct. I think specifically.
I think you say nobody wins except Tezzeret.
Yes. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. Or the plane is okay and they chase Tezzeret away.
Yes. Yeah,
I can see that. Like, right, because now, like, all of the freaking Gatewatch is there.
Yeah.
Like, a Johnny is taking an oath. He's going to be part of the Gatewatch. Chandra's there. Nissa's there. You know, freaking whoever else is there. So everybody came to the party, whether they were invited or not.
And this is my question to you. Will we see yet another Oath of the Gatewatch card in Amonkhet?
Who else could they possibly add?
It's going to be Tezzeret's middle claw. I will keep watch. He turns good.
Oh, wow. That would be a twist.
That's a twist. It'd
be a real twist.
Hey, everybody. This is Magic the Amateuring, by the way. Don't think we said that.
No. I'm one of your hosts, Megan.
And I'm one of your hosts, Maria. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking all about Aether Revolt because the pre-release officially happened this past weekend. It was awesome.
Yeah.
New cards, new fun times. We've been doing a lot of just looking at the cards, playing with the cards, thinking about what the format's going to be like because it's going to be released this coming Friday. So that's going to be fun.
Maria's going to tell you all about her experience at the pre-release, and then we're going to take a look at her pool with fresh eyes and see what we would build and see if it, if it overlaps or not.
It's like Megan and you against me. So it's me against the world here. I'm going to have some things to answer for. I'm pretty sure. Okay. And we're also going to do a flavor text theater with our brand new Aether Revolt cards. We haven't done an Aether Revolt flavor text theater yet. So that's exciting.
That's right. Also in For the Noobs, we're going to talk about the dangers of a place called Magical Christmas Land.
Sounds great, Megan. Why wouldn't I want to live there?
Well, we're going to tell you why not.
Okay. But before we
and
do
it's
any
not
of that,
just because elves are scary.
Okay. But you're a cookie elf.
Yeah, I am. But I'm talking about Christmas elves.
You're scared of Christmas elves?
Everybody should be scared of Christmas elves.
Just because you don't know what they're doing.
No, I mean, I have real reasons.
Oh, my God. I'm terrified. That's so scary.
Good, you should be.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe that's an extra special patron special moment right
there. There you go.
Speaking of Patreon, thank thank you to everybody who's become a new member of the Less Than 1% Club since our last episode. Welcome to the family. And thank you again to everybody who continues to support the show on a monthly basis. We're so happy that you could support the show and put your money behind something that you care about.
That's right. In just a few short days, in fact, we are going to have our sick new fridge magnets, which are going out to all of our $5 patrons that started subbing after November 1st of 2016. They are incredible. They're super cool.
We're really excited
to see them.
I'm so excited.
I eagerly await the box arriving.
I know it's going to be great.
It's going to be so cool.
So yeah, and of course, Discord, you can join in on the Discord chat. If you're a patron, we've had a little bit of trouble with connection issues, but Patreon is working on that, and you can always send us a private message and we'll get you connected manually if we can't do it the automatic way. But
that's right.
Just some perks.
Thank you all as well as always to our sponsor, Card Kingdom. CardKingdom.com/MTAcast is the place we say you should go to purchase all of your magic needs.
And what we say is what you say is what I say. Name that movie. It's not an exact quote. It's Newsies. It's a really bad version of that quote, but
what is the actual quote?
I say what you say is what I say. Brooklyn.
All right.
Spot Collins.
All right. All right.
CardKingdom.com/MTAcast for everything you could want. People be brewing right now.
Yeah, man. You can go crazy. Standard is wide open. It is the, you know, it's the vast plains out there.
Yeah.
I mean, so heard some thought cattle across it.
Speaking of terrifying things, thought cattle.
What's scary about a thought cow?
Just like if I'm, you know, if I think about a thought cow, I'm going to make a thought cow and it's going to come trampling through wherever I am.
Yeah, that's true. You got to watch out. Well, that's why you can't make a bunch of thought cows. Make just one, it's very manageable.
Could I eat thought cheese with my thought cow?
I mean, only after you do some thought cheese making.
Okay. All right. Not sure how that would taste. Thought cheese sounds
really
not ideal.
No, it sounds really. I don't know what it is, but that combination of words is
thought cheese. Just sitting over here making my thought cheese.
No, not cool. Not cool.
As a quick reminder, you can check us out on youtube.com/MTAcast. We're putting videos up there like basically all the time now.
That's right. There are so many videos. You can find deck techs. You can find us telling you what new Aether Revolt cards are awesome and sealed or are terrible and sealed.
It's got all you could want. Plus, we have our MTA Place sister channel, which will soon have its own unique URL. But there, April King, Judge April, is posting her cube videos and her current record. Megan, what do you think her current record is?
Her current record is something absurd, isn't it? Like, it's like 20-6 or something in Legacy Cube.
It's like 23-2.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So if you want to learn how to cube better, probably watch those. And we've got other videos from her up on our main channel as well. So a lot of stuff going online for us right now. And we encourage you to go check it out. For the noobs living in magical Christmas land.
So, Maria.
Yes.
Magical Christmas land. What does that mean, even?
So it sounds like a fantastic place. I would want to be at somewhere called Magical Christmas Land. I know, minus the elves. We've been through that, so I'll take those out of the equation. Mm-hmm. But what it is, what it means, essentially, is it's a way of thinking about a game. And when you're living in Magical Christmas Land, you're assuming everything will always go right for you in every game ever.
Yeah, that things will basically work out perfectly.
And you're probably sitting there saying, that's not me. I would never do that. I'm a pessimist, glass half empty. Well, you'd be surprised how many people put cards in their deck that are magical Christmas land cards thinking this is going to be awesome if A plus B plus C equals I win.
That's right. A lot of it boils down to, it could be as simple as like being sure that you're going to draw these two unique cards in your deck to make them good. If card A is only good with card B, then maybe you should not be putting card A in your deck, because you don't, like, the chances of you drawing both of them in each game is not high.
Quite low.
Yeah, especially drawing card A, like before you draw card B, because what if you draw card B and then you need to hold on to card, like you have to hold on to it and wait for card A to come along, but then like you're not even casting card B, and like what if you needed to because it was a creature and you needed to cast it and you're losing on the board, but you're just waiting around hoping the creature A will come along.
Yeah, great example. Here's the terrible thing. The reason Magical Christmas Land is so enticing is not only because when you live there, it snows beautiful, fluffy snow every day while maintaining a temperature of 70 degrees Fahrenheit. It's a strange place. But because it is a real place. Like, you can get there. The only problem is...
Yeah, you can. But it's just, like, not often enough to be thinking that you're always on the way there.
Right.
It's like if I was taking a road trip... And I, you know, I threw a dart at a map to decide where I was going, but I assumed I was going to California the whole time. And I packed as if I were going to California.
Yes. And then you're like, why am I surrounded by potatoes?
Yeah, exactly.
You're in Idaho.
That would at least be in the right direction.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm thinking like I'd end up in Maine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wasn't ready to eat lobsters.
But you're like, the ocean, I found it.
Yeah.
But why are there so many B&Bs? Whoops.
California is known for having no bed and breakfasts.
So that's the thing. Like, it is possible to have awesome and epic plays and games. And that's why it's so, you know, incredibly just like tantalizing to think about accomplishing and getting Magical Christmas Land. And it feels great when you accomplish something, when you pull off that sweet combo that you have randomly in your draft deck, or you just hit your curve and are able to somehow cast like an eight drop unassisted on the correct turn with all of your mana or something like that. But the thing is, overall, it doesn't always happen, and you won't always end up in California.
That's right. And you also have to think about, like, is the payoff of playing these cards so high that it's worth the times that it doesn't work out?
Right.
Because sometimes the answer is, like, maybe yes.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the card is, like, medium on its own, but, like, really amazing if you get it in Magical Christmas Land situations. Then it's like, okay, maybe you are going to include it. But there's lots of cards that people end up putting in their decks that are... The answer is that if they don't have it in the Magical Christmas situation, it's terrible.
Right.
And so it's like, well, you may... Maybe you'll win a game... Because you know, you got this sweet situation going on. But then you're going to turn around and lose a game because you drew this card. And maybe you even cast it, but it's just such a garbage card. And, like, you basically wasted a spell in your hand. Like, you wasted one of your resources. Dreaming.
So here's why we're talking about this, is because it's something good to remind ourselves about when we're going into a new sort of set and pre-release and sealed environment. And we made a video on YouTube that you can check out called the Top 10 Worst Rares or Mythic Rares to open at your Aether Revolt pre-release. And I think it stands for any kind of sealed tournament that you're in. And we got a lot of comments about some of them, which people were trying to argue were actually really good. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is because their reasoning for including them in their deck was quite often very Magical Christmassy.
Yes.
It had a peppermint tang to it. So, which I shouldn't have said that. But let's think about the card, for example. One of them on our... Are you still thinking about that?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm trying to think of what word I would use because...
Besides tang?
Because tang is like really wrong. Like a peppermint freshness.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, we can move on now.
Let's take the card Indomitable Creativity, for example, which is one that we included on our list. And I think it was number 10, so spoiler alert. But it's big and it's splashy, and what is it, X, red, 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 or something like that? And then you can destroy any number of X target artifacts and then replace them with cards.
Random from cards from the top of your library.
Yeah.
Random permanence.
Permanence.
Non-land permanence.
So the reason that we said this card is bad is because you are spinning the wheel, essentially, and you might downgrade your creatures without even thinking about it. You might not get a creature. I mean, the things... it's kind of endless.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it on your opponent, you are essentially risking giving them an even better creature than the one that you are killing.
Yes, it is card disadvantage, straight up.
Straight up.
Because they're going to get a replacement for what you destroyed no matter what, and you spent a card destroying it.
Right. So we had a lot of people defending this card, which is totally fine. You're 100% free to disagree with us, but we just wanted to take a moment to, you know, kind of talk about why a little more in depth, why something like this is a trip to magical Christmas land and you might want to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah. Some people were speculating like, oh, I mean, like, obviously, yes, you'd want to use this on like, oh, maybe you'd made like a bunch of servos.
Right.
But even then, if I wanted to, like, if X is three, I have three servos out, I'm paying six mana to destroy three resources on my side because like servos aren't nothing.
No.
Is an important thing to point out. People are saying this as though, like, it doesn't matter. It does. Like, maybe you're using them for,
Improvise.
Like, they are blockers. If you're using a swarm strategy, you're getting rid of creatures that are part of your swarm that you're trying to use. Like, I just want to point out, first of all, that a servo is not nothing.
That's right. Servos have rights, right, too.
And if you're acting as though your servos are nothing, I think you're misevaluating your resources, which is pretty important.
Sick point.
In the first place. And then they're like, well, then you do this and you destroy it and you get your bombs.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, how many, like...
Yeah, that card's got better be in the next top two or one cards of your deck.
Exactly. Even if you're doing... So you have like 16 creatures in your deck.
Yeah.
And you're thinking that... Looking at the top three random ones, you're going to hit your best stuff. What if you hit a random 2/2?
Yeah.
And then you've gone and you've destroyed a thing that you owned. You've destroyed a thing that you own. You, like...
With rights.
You spent a card out of your hand to do it, and... Like, you're just random, like, maybe you'll get your bomb, but as many times as you get your bomb, more times than you get your bomb, you're gonna get some, like, freaking 2/3. And you're gonna be like, why did I do this? For four mana, I destroyed my thing and I got myself a 2/3 and I cast a card out of my hand.
Yay! That doesn't sound like a card I want to play a mythic and spend. It costs 3 red too.
Exactly. Like, do you know what? Oof. Do you want to make a servo a 4/4 when it really matters? Then play Built to Smash and cast it on it.
Maybe put a 4/4 in your deck.
Exactly. Like, yeah, exactly. If you want a 4/4 out of this, just like play a 4/4. And then you're, do you know what? Every time you cast it, you're definitely going to get a 4/4, and you didn't kill a servo in the meantime.
Oh, I wonder if I'll get a 4/4 when I cast this. Oh, I did!
Oh, okay. And like, what if this is in your opening hand, and you have no, like, you have like two creatures, and they're both like 2 mana 2/2s already. Then, like, you're just going to hold on to this card until you draw something that makes servos, and then you're going to cast the thing that makes servos, and then you're going to also cast this. Like, I would rather just have a creature that I could put onto the board.
Like a Riparian Tiger.
Like a Riparian Tiger. Someone thought that we were dissing that card, and I love that card. I had a seal pool that had three of them, and I played three.
Of course.
I put all three of those suckers in the deck with some Eddie Trailhawks. Man, I'll just, like... You know.
What if, even, you built your deck really well because you are a smart person and you have good cards in your deck and you're sitting there with your good creatures on the battlefield and this dead ass card in your hand if you're trying to target
like,
your own
thing. Like, what if you have no creatures that you can even cast this on? What if you've had to chump your creatures away?
So it's an artifact or a... creature card.
An artifact or a creature. So you're not even definitely going to get three creatures if you kill three servos.
So anyway.
If someone's like, oh, you can get a Metalwork Colossus. Like,
okay. I can think of so many better ways.
Maybe on my birthday.
So here's somebody mentioned, like, what if you built your deck with Scrap Trawler and Cantrip Artifacts and Ornithopters and whatever and had all this in there? And I'm just like, boy, you are putting a lot of cards that are not great into your deck.
Yeah, they're talking about Pia's Revolution in this case.
Oh, yeah, this is Pia's Revolution. Yeah. That's another one that we mentioned. But
yeah, and people are also talking about this, like, they're talking about Atog in that case.
Oh, yeah,
Atog. Which is, like, then you're not... and our video was also specifically about Sealed. So
yeah, that's true.
Anyways, so Pia's Revolution again is like, oh, you're gonna play an Ornithopter in your deck to make that good?
Yeah.
Like,
don't play an Ornithopter.
But then you have an Ornithopter in your deck, and like the best thing it's gonna do is like block a creature. And then
die.
Deal your opponent 3 damage. Because if they want it to die, then they'll just have it, you know, like be dealt 3 damage. And if they're like, I can deal with that Ornithopter hanging around, it'll just go back to your hand. Congratulations. You have another Ornithopter.
I think a lot of people might be trying to use improvise as a great excuse for putting things like Ornithopter in their deck. But it's just not good enough to be able to.
Well, look, here's an idea. Put a land in your deck.
I was only going to play improvised cards and Ornithopters, though.
Oh, my God. Just improvised cards and Ornithopters.
15 Ornithopters.
Perfect.
And, like,
perfect. Why the heck not?
Several other cards.
Yeah. Yeah. And so someone mentioned, like, they lost a game at the pre-release to Indomitable Creativity. Like, yes, it will happen.
It will happen.
You will be the poor soul who loses a game to the one time someone got their magical Christmas land.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't mean that it's good. They got their magical Christmas land one time. Look at that person's record at the end of the day. If they, like, you know, if they go 8-1 or 9-0 at the day one of a GP, then we can talk.
Right.
But so, if you're telling me that they won a match at a pre-release, I'm like, okay, they got super lucky one time.
That's called results-oriented thinking.
Yes.
And we've talked about that on the show before, as has Limited Resources quite extensively. If you want to search that up and learn more about that, it's kind of an interesting concept. But yeah, I think the main point is these kind of Johnny cards are really fun to build with. And if you're just doing it for fun, you know, go for it.
Exactly.
But if you want to be like a spike about it.
Yes.
I don't know if it's going to work out for you.
Yeah. If you're trying to be a spike and you're living in magical Christmas land, your name is actually Johnny. Sorry.
So true.
Go check your birth certificate.
Just put good cards in your deck instead.
Exactly.
You don't need Hope of Ghirapur being a stupid 1/1. It's going to get in for maybe 2, maybe 3 damage. And then they're going to play a 2/2 for 3. And then you're going to be like, oh. My card was so worthless. That you only have 40 cards. You gotta value them.
Yeah, you do.
You know?
Each one is precious.
Each one of my 40 cats, I treat like my own child.
Yep.
So.
Also, can you read me Hope of Ghirapur? Can you look it up real quick?
Yeah.
Because I also, I think, I want to check something before.
Sure.
Before I say it. But, like, yeah. And that's not to say, like, play around with these in weird constructed formats. Like, do that. Awesome. Maybe there is a deck in which Indomitable Creativity is, like, crazy sweet, you know?
Right.
In
a different format.
In, like, you know, in EDH, in, like, maybe there's a crazy deck of it in Standard. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, sure, dream big, but if you're playing Sealed, like, don't do it. Just
I think ruffled a tiny bit of feathers when we said these are the worst cards in Aether Revolt to open in your Sealed deck. And while we say they're, you know, these cards are bad, shake our finger at them, we're primarily referring to how they play out in a Sealed deck game. We're not necessarily saying like these cards are terrible and should never have been printed, because I think there is definitely a place for quote unquote bad cards to exist in a set. You know, I mean, they can't all be gems.
No.
And WotC refers to them a lot of times as skill testing cards, knowing which cards are good and which cards are bad, because it wouldn't be fun if you went into a draft and everybody always knew which card was the best card. Like, full
absolutely.
Stop.
Absolutely.
So we'll probably talk about that more on another episode, but here's Hope of Ghirapur.
Yeah. Okay, so you can sacrifice it at any time. I wasn't sure if, the way it was worded, you could even only sacrifice it when it was dealt damage or when it had been dealt, or it had dealt your opponent damage. So it does look like you can sacrifice it at any time.
Okay.
Well, so that's a little at least better.
That's something. Still want to play it.
Like, why are you putting a card in your deck so that you can sacrifice it?
I mean, you know, people are talking about Revolt. I feel like Revolt is more something that just, you know, happens. And if it happens, great.
Yeah.
I mean, if I built the all-in Revolt deck, which, what is paying me off for that? I'm not exactly sure. But then maybe I would think about it. But also, I probably would just have better cards.
Yeah.
Aether Revolt pre-release party time. So, yeah, this past weekend was the pre-release. Hope you all had fun if you went. I managed to hit up two of them. Megan was busy graduating with an MFA degree. No big deal.
It really kept me busy that weekend.
So you didn't actually get to go to any pre-releases. But,
No.
But you know, secured your life a degree.
Yes.
So that's pretty good.
That's true.
So what's going to happen is, this is from my first pre-release that I went to that I managed to 4-0. And Megan's going to try and build her version of the deck and see how close we come or how far apart we are. Just really interesting, I think.
Yeah, I thought we could just kind of go through it and see what's good in each color.
Sure.
So I feel like you definitely played green.
You're correct.
You have a Bristling Hydra in here.
Yep.
Which is just like a very good card.
Yeah.
A Fairgrounds Trumpeter, which is very good with Bristling Hydra.
True.
A Pima Outrider, an Arborback Stomper.
Yep.
God, that card is so good.
There's your Riparian Tiger.
I've lost to Arborback Stomper like so many times.
That card, every time I played it, the person was like, ugh.
Yeah, like it's just like, it's oh sick. My God, five freaking life. And it's a 5/4?
Yeah.
It's with absurd. Trample. Yeah, you have a Riparian Tiger. You have, let's see, like this Lifecraft Cavalry I really like, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a 4/4 trample for 4 and a green with Revolt. You get 2 +1/+1 counters if a permanent left the battlefield. Like, even this Aether Herder is, I think, probably one of the better cards in the series. Because it's a 3/3 for 4, which is just, like, a very solid body.
Yeah.
Especially in the format, I feel like there's a lot of like 2/3s running around, so yes. 3/3 does a lot of work against a format of a lot of 2/3s.
Yeah, my green was very strong.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it.
And I had a Prey Upon, which if you've got a lot of big green beefy creatures, is pretty good.
An Aetherstream Leopard, which is like a smaller Riparian Tiger.
Yep. Aetherstream Leopard, you get +2/+0 and trample if you pay an energy, and it gets an energy when it comes into the battlefield.
Well, it just always has trample.
It just always has it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have a Prey Upon. So yeah, that looks pretty good. You have 3 High Spire Infusions.
Yes.
I guess you have a lot of creatures with trample, so.
Yeah, High Spire Infusion in this deck. I called it my MVP, which might have been a little bit of an overstatement, but it was strong when you've got a lot of trample creatures.
Yeah. That seems good. The next thing that I kind of like caught my eye while I was putting this together was white.
Oh, you nailed it! That was my second color.
Oh man, I feel like I suspected it, but you have some like. No, I mean I feel like yeah, that seems pretty.
Again, it's like pretty straightforward.
You have some evasion with your Sky Swirl Harrier. You have this Aether Geode Miner.
I always was immediately killed.
Yeah, I believe that. Because otherwise you can never kill it.
You can never kill it.
Otherwise you can never kill it. Let's see. Yeah. Ooh, Countless Gears Renegade. I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, Countless Gears Renegade is pretty solid. It's just a 2/2 for 2 most of the time, but occasionally brings along a little servo with it if you trigger Revolt.
Ooh, Deadeye Harpooner.
Yeah, this card I actually wanted to talk about. Which I'll talk about later, but yeah, that's a very interesting card.
Thopter Arrest, and then like Glintsleeve Artisan, which I really like Glintsleeve Artisan.
Still
it's
solid.
Like quite a good card.
Especially now with Improvise, even more solid.
Yeah. So, yeah. I guess the other stuff, like the stuff that I pulled my eye in black was... Yeah. Let's see, where is it? You had a rare in here that I remember seeing.
I do. Ooh,
so you have like a Cruel Finality, which I like, and you have Battle at the Bridge,
yes.
Which is very good, but like your creatures are so mediocre in here.
Right.
I guess, yeah, nope. And then I dropped one of the Night Market Lookouts.
Okay.
I thought, like, just knowing your tendencies, I thought you might have gone red.
Yeah.
Like Double Shock is pretty sweet.
That did tempt me for a while, but
yeah, Wayward Giant is actually like a card I've been pretty happy with.
Yes,
yeah. Like a 4/5 is just a very solid Menace. Body, and Menace gets around it just being like chump blocked by a servo, and plus a Brazen Scourge and a Speedway Fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
I could have seen you going that way, but like, yeah, it's just overall lower lower quality than white.
Agree.
And obviously, I like blue always.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to. Man, I'd love to see an efficient construction deck.
Wouldn't that be so cool?
God, I would love to see
free
that.
Free thopters for everyone.
You get a thopter.
Just me.
You get a thopter. You get a thopter. I actually really like Metallic Rebuke, like an artifact heavy deck. Reverse Engineer. I love drawing cards. Implement of Examination. I love drawing cards. Plus this Aethertide Whale.
Yeah, the Aethertide Whale really tempted me.
Like, yeah, that's really hard to turn down. But at the same time, I get it. Like, you have a malfunction.
Yeah.
I could see, like, your green creatures are so solid. Like, maybe it can make up for the fact that, like, you do have, like, just sucky creatures beside this whale.
Yeah.
I mean, I love me a thriving turtle, but he can't get the job done on his own.
No. No, he can't, sadly. Once I had a thriving turtle become a, you know, the stories. What's the biggest thriving turtle you ever saw?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was a 5-something.
Like a 5-7?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good job.
I had like 2 or 3 of them in the deck, though. So it was Turtle Plan was the deck.
Yeah. The best thing my turtle ever did was pilot a helicopter.
That's pretty cute.
It's pretty good. Let's see. You also have Filigree Familiar.
Yep. He was in there.
That seems. Is this bad? Did you play this?
This card.
Daredevil Dragster.
Yeah, this is an super interesting card, Daredevil Dragster. I want to talk about it. 4/4 for 3, crew 2. So we always talk about the crew cost being low as something as good to put in your deck. Here's the thing with this, though. At the end of combat, if it attacked or blocked this combat, put a velocity counter on it. Then if it has 2 or more velocity counters on it, sacrifice it and draw 2 cards. So, like, you're getting rid of your 4/4 that hit or blocked for 2 turns, but in exchange, you're drawing 2 cards from it. My overall grade for this would be a C. I thought it was fine, but it was never, like, incredible. It sucked because it was, I mean, it's a 4/4 with crew 2. That's pretty good. That's, you know, akin to our Untethered Express.
Yeah.
Which is better than this card, but.
Yeah. Did you play it?
I did play it, and I did not hate it.
Okay.
But I didn't, you know.
Untethered Express, you're definitely playing. Oh, yes, right? That card is nuts.
Yeah.
Whenever it attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Like,
what?
Four mana, crew one. Go to hell.
Yeah, that card's disgusting. Go to hell
on a furious rhino train.
That thing is the number one hated card. I'm calling it right now.
I'm sure it is. Look at that. That's insane.
Yep.
Good thing it's at uncommon. God, if it was like a freighter at common. Everyone would be so mad. So you also had a Peacewalker Colossus, yes, which I'm certain you played.
I did play it.
A Filigree Familiar.
Yep.
Which I hope you played.
Played him.
He's so cute.
So cute.
Oh, Maria, did you play Inspiring Statuary?
I didn't.
You shouldn't. And this is another one people were like, yeah, it basically so just good. Ramps you because it itself can tap for improvise.
Ooh.
Like, you still spent one of your precious 23 spells on this 3-mana thing that does literally nothing on its own.
Yeah. And, I mean, isn't it your non-artifact, like, spells have improvised?
Yes. And, like, you're trying to tell me that this is, like, cultivate. People were like, oh, there's other mana rocks. And it's like, if you're trying to compare this to Cultivator's Caravan, which becomes a 5/5, Hedron Archive, which was in a set that had tons of, like, eight drops.
Yes, and you drew cards.
Like, this is not it.
No, and it's here's the thing. I never would have wanted it. And I was playing big creatures. I was playing green, right?
Yeah.
I never needed it. I would never needed to, like, some weird way to ramp into my dudes. Did not need it. Did not want it. And in this set, the biggest stuff is artifact stuff. So, just saying.
All right, you're going to tell me some of these other ones. Consulate Turret.
Which one was that one? No, I did not.
All right.
But I mean, I guess you could make a case for that.
Yeah, there's something that I like about it, but I don't know. 2 damage is not a lot, and like you'd have to tap it. But I guess if you had other ways to make energy, or you just need energy. Anyways.
There's something else about this deck, too.
Okay, hold on.
But
You have a Concealed Courtyard.
Yes.
Did you use it to play Battle at the Bridge?
I sure did.
Of course you did. That's really good.
And I also played the kill spell.
The Cruel Finality?
Cruel Finality.
Look, are you telling me that we could get the 2 cards that I wanted to play in black into this deck?
It's almost like this deck builds itself.
Oh,
it's
so man. Perfect. It seems pretty good.
Yeah, so, like, overall with this deck, I loved it.
It seems pretty good.
The creatures were good. I had good removal. My my artifacts, like my trains, were tough to deal with. My Peacewalker Colossus, I got out and managed to crew, I think, on turn 4 or something.
Oh my gosh, that was gross.
It was pretty gross. My opponent was was like, "What is my life?" But I was not in love with this card. I don't think it's worthy of a pack one, pick one, just because
that's really good to know.
The second ability is so very rarely relevant. It is occasionally, but it's not super often that you have multiple vehicles just sitting out there waiting to be crewed. But
all right, here are my last two questions.
Yeah.
Ironstead Crusher, 4 mana, 6/6, crew 3.
I didn't play it. I don't know.
I was leaning towards two. But I didn't know.
Yeah.
Reservoir Walker, 5 mana, 3/3, gain 3 life and get 3 energy.
I did not.
All right.
But I wouldn't say no to anybody who put those in.
Eager Construct?
No.
All right. So, let's take a quick look at what we've got here.
Lay out the mana curve.
We've got a Prey Upon, which I assume that you play.
Yes.
I would play this pair of Aether Herders.
I think I might have only ended up playing one.
That's fair. I could see it being, like, your mana cost being a little high, because you do have a lot of 4s and 5s.
Yeah.
So I could see not doing it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Doop doop to do.
Thopter Arrest, a quality card. When I played it, people just basically said, "So that's O-ring," and I said, "Yep." And the thing is, in sealed, it's, you know, sometimes you don't have the artifact removal, like the 1 mana blow up an enchantment or something. So it just stuck around and, you know, wrecked people.
Yeah.
Like, look at this. It's a great curve. Yeah. I've got good quality 2-drops. Here's a card that went up in my estimation, which was an Audacious Infiltrator, which is a 2-drop for 3. It's 3/1 for 1 and a white, and it can't be blocked by artifact creatures.
Yeah, I mean, get wrecked, Servos.
Yep. And that's the thing. In a format with Servos, you do not want a 3/1, but he can't be blocked by them, and he's fantastic at crewing your vehicles.
Yeah. Well, Maria, this looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, this was a great deck. I sometimes cite it into 2 High Spare infusions because it's a pre-release and a lot of times people don't expect or don't know the tricks.
Yeah,
and I have so many good trample dudes that
plus it was 3 just plus like, 3 is pretty big.
Yeah.
Nice. And you get to play Battle of the Bridge and Cruel Finality. What's it like having it all?
It was great having it all. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to say about any of these.
Yeah, tell us about anything else from your games or your...
Deadeye Harpooner, I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
This card is 2 and a white for a 2/2, so that's a little underrated, but you're not going to, you know, cry. When it enters the battlefield, if a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, so revolt, destroy target tapped creature an opponent controls. So that is insanely powerful.
Yeah, obviously.
My only thing was that getting this to trigger on something that you wanted to kill when you wanted to kill it was quite difficult.
I believe that.
So I would say if you put in your deck and you're expecting, I mean, it's also sealed, so I didn't necessarily take any cards that may or may not have allowed me to have easy revolt triggers.
Yeah.
It was just tough. So don't think you're going to be able to use it every time and it's going to be an A+. Sometimes it's just going to be a 2/2 and you just got to suck it up. One good way to trigger revolt that was also a very good card is that green card that costs 1 mana. Ooh, I wrote it down. It's the new Prism, just kidding, but it's pretty great overperformers. Unbridled Growth. So it costs a single green mana and you can put it on your land and it taps for any color, and then you can sacrifice it to draw a card, so it replaces itself.
Oh, nice.
It's very good. It triggers your revolt, it fixes your mana, which I needed, and gets you a card when you want one.
Yeah, I also noticed this would have been in blue, but Implement of Examination.
Mm-hmm.
You can pay blue to sacrifice it.
Yeah.
You draw a card. And when it's put into a graveyard, you draw a card.
Yes.
So you could basically pay 3 and then another blue, trigger revolt, and draw 2 cards. Sick.
So here's where I need some help, Megan.
All right.
That deck came together pretty easily.
Yeah.
This is my second pool that I went 2-2 with, and that was a battle.
All right. Tell us a little bit about what you felt went wrong with this deck.
Sure.
While I look at it.
Here's the issue that I ran into. I was opening this pool, and I thought to myself, You have made it. Baby, you've made it. This is great. You have every piece of removal, premium removal, that you could possibly want. I had two of the unconditional black removal spell, which is two black, black, destroy, whatever the heck you want. I had Yahini's expertise. Get everything negative three. Play something with three or less from your hand. Okay. I had two Caught in the Brights. I had one, some other white removal spell. I can't remember. And I was just, I mean, I was just walking on air. That was until I started to try to put creatures in my deck, which is often the problem when you find yourself loaded up with tons of sweet removal. You just have no dudes. So that was kind of what I ran into. And I'll see if you can figure out a better way to solve it than I could, because I couldn't really solve it. I switched colors halfway through the night and it didn't really help me out. I will tell a story from this pre-release, though, of a deck that I saw in action that I think is going to be a sweet draft deck. These people managed to have it in sealed, which is incredible. But be on the lookout for this. And it's what I call the Snek deck.
Snek deck.
And that is, what is that actually, the card actually called? It's some Vipers.
Snek.
Let's just call it a Snek. It's a black Snek and a green. And it doubles. Not doubles. It adds another, that would be insane, another counter onto a permanent if it would get a counter of a certain type. So that means you get an extra energy. Your dudes get an extra +1/+1 if they manage to get a counter on them. That Snek is a 2/3 for 2, so it's already above rate. And that ability is disgusting. I played two different people that had two Sneks each. And
two Sneks?
Two of that Snek.
Jeez, that's a lot of Sneks.
Scrounging Bandars, which you may know is one and a green for a 0/0, but when it enters the battlefield, you give it 2 +1/+1 counters. But guess what? With the Snek, it gets another one. And if you happen to have two Sneks out, you just played a 4/4 for 2 mana.
Jesus.
And you can give that Bandar's counters to something else the next upkeep if you want. And guess what? They're not only going to get one of that Bandar's counters, they're going to get two of that Bandar's counters if you moved one over. So that deck is real. It's insane. And I almost cried when it happened. I was just like, there is no way on earth I can beat this. It was Greg, was one of the people who had this deck. And it was just fantastic. It was at that point I started wondering if the Snek was going to see standard play, because it was insanely powerful.
That seems really impressive.
So just be on the lookout for that when you draft down at the LGS, because it was also a lot of fun. Even though I got destroyed by it, I was just in awe of this masterpiece I was sitting across from. If you manage to get a Ridge Scale Tusker in there as well, that's a card that people are calling the Gear Hulk at Uncommon, because it gives a counter to all of your creatures when it enters the battlefield, and is a 5/5 to boot. So, you know, if you can't draft a rare Gear Hulk, why not draft an uncommon one? So that was a deck I saw. The card you really like, the 4/4 that becomes a 6/6 with trample, is insane in the Snek deck.
Sure.
Lifecraft Cavalry. This is a card that I found to be an overperformer, which you'll see in this deck, so maybe I shouldn't say, because maybe you will.
Yeah, okay, give me a clue.
I won't give you a clue. Druid of the Cowl, I don't have any in here. Druid of the Cowl is a 1/3, and it's a mana dork, so it taps for green mana. This card, I think, overperformed. I didn't have one, but I saw it. I played against it, and every time I did, it was rather annoying, because it blocks so very well, and it ramps you as well. And you brought this card up. I know that you always are interested in seeing ramp in standard and seeing if it's a card that could potentially be played.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was super strong and sealed too, so keep it a lookout for Druid of the Cowl as well. I think that card is better than it looks, because it looks just like a 1/3 for 2, but it has lots of uses and a good booty to boot. This is a question. Here's my philosophical question for everybody as you're laying out my cards. The card Caught in the Brights, okay? We all can agree that it's horrific and you should never run over a gremlin. Terrible. How dare you?
It's terrible.
But I'm going to read it just really quick.
Yeah.
It's 2 and a white, enchantment aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack or block. When a vehicle you control attacks, exile enchanted creature. So here's the thing, can't attack or block, you're like, oh, this is great removal, and then you drive your car and run that creature over.
Daring demolition, destroy target creature or vehicle.
Yeah, that's
my,
it.
Oh, my friend.
So here's my question for you. This or revoke privileges? So
revoke.
I agree. And I was playing this card as if it were revoke privileges, which I should have been doing, but that's kind of how my brain was still thinking about it. And so I'd play it on something, and then I would think, oh, guess what? It can still crew a vehicle and destroy me. Oh, guess what? It's a SNCC. It can still have all its abilities and sit there with its abilities and put counters on everything. You know, it was just not as good as I wanted it to be. I was even running a couple of vehicles in this deck, and it still didn't do it for me. I don't know. Maybe in draft, it'll be better, and you'll more reliably have the vehicles when you want them. But I just got to say, everybody, Ravenbow caught in the brights. Guess what? I like Revoke Privileges better. There, I said it.
Wow.
I said it. It's no Thopter Arrest. I mean, either of them. But, yeah. I mean, yeah. So that's basically my stories from this deck. My overall, what's the word I'm looking for? Observations.
Okay. So I'll start by saying, like, I don't think I'm playing red.
I did not consider red either.
Yeah. There's just, you know, there's just nothing really impressive. You do have a Chandra's Revolution and a Welding Sparks and a Shock, which is pretty good. But all of your creatures are, like, really underwhelming.
Yeah.
It is just downright not good.
This deck also, I'm going to point out, there is no mana fixing, just FYI.
Yeah. All right. Like, my next guess is that, like, all of these blue cards are also too underwhelming to play.
Yeah.
Like, Shipwreck Moray, like, no, you have like, 7 cards in blue here.
And yeah, it's just not very enough. Good.
Nope.
There is Confiscation Coup, but you can't ride.
Is great, but we're not doing it.
Nope.
So, I'm down to green, white, and black.
And this is also where I landed. And,
yeah, which makes a lot of sense to me.
You'll see I have a Deadeye Harpooner again.
Yep.
I have 2 Caught in the Brights and a Skywhaler shot. 2 copies of SRAM Senior Edificer.
Yeah.
So be careful. He's legendary.
Yeah.
I almost screwed myself with that.
All right.
That's kind of the notable stuff in white.
Yeah.
I have a Call for Unity, which is a house if you can get it to turn on and you have enough creatures to make it worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, pretty impressive.
In case you don't know, I'll read it. At the beginning of your end step, of course, it's a revolt trigger, you get to put a unity counter on Call for Unity. It's 3 white-white enchantment. Creatures you control get +1/+1 for each unity counter on Call for Unity. So it's an anthem effect that just sticks around. +1/+1 if to be okay, +2/+2, and you're really starting to get somewhere.
Yeah, that's impressive. But as you mentioned, I feel like revolt is kind of like sometimes can be tough.
Yeah. It is.
Sometimes can certainly be tough.
Yeah, especially in an environment where you can't draft around it. So, you know, don't live in magical Christmas land about your revolt cards always being triggered, would be my advice. Megan's laying out my black now. In black, I have, like she mentioned, 2 copies of Daring Demolition, which kills any creature or vehicle. Foundry Hornet, which is a kind of cool card. It's a 2/3 for 3 and a black. A flying little hornet. Hornet duder. And if you revolted, wait, no, what is it?
When it enters the battlefield, if you control a creature with a +1/+1 counter on it, creatures your opponent control get -1/-1.
Yeah.
Until end of turn.
I managed to have a Pain Train in this deck, Renegade Freighter, an Iron League Steed, a Bastion Mastodon, which is just, you know, a 4/5 that gets vigilance for a single white, but sometimes in sealed can be the kind of beef you need at the top, which used to be the motto for
Wendy's.
The kind of beef you need at the top. Wendy's. Yeah. Until they realized that was terrible and went with fresh, never frozen. Wendy's, just think about it.
Okay. So I didn't lay out the artifacts of the green and white, was maybe a mistake. But I think I would probably go with green-black.
That is what I went with as well.
Yeah.
And halfway through the night, I switched into white just to see they were equally mediocre.
Yeah.
You can see my creature quality just was a little low.
Yeah, you have like just all of these 3 drops.
Yeah.
Did you play this Fenhauler?
Did I play the Fenhauler? Yes, I played the Fenhauler and I also played the 7/5 artifact that must attack just to see if I could turn on improvise enough to make
them. Yeah.
I never did. Spoiler alert. I never once. Yeah,
like just play this accomplished automaton instead.
I never once was able to get them out with improvise.
Yeah.
I didn't have any servos, you know? It's like, even though I could play a little bit of cards from, it just couldn't make it happen. I did play the Puzzle Knot.
Yeah. It seems good.
This is a card that's interesting. It's Pacification Array. One, it's an artifact. Two, and tap it. Tap target artifact or creature. I think that card is just fine. It's not on a creature, which in which case everybody would say play it all the time. So that's why I initially kind of had a little bit of a question about it. Oh, should I play this? Should I not? But I ended up playing it and I liked it.
Yeah. I wonder, and having just had this, you know, whole conversation about Magic Christmas Land.
Yeah.
I wonder if, because your power level was, like, so mediocre.
Yeah.
And, like, not impressive, and you have all of these, like, not good three drops.
Yeah.
If there's something to be said for trying playing, like, Aid from the Cowl, uh-huh. which you have, which is the Revolt card, that if you have Revolt at the beginning of your end step, you reveal the top card of your library. If it's a permanent, you put it on the battlefield. Otherwise, you put it on the bottom of your library, which is, like... That's crappy with two Daring Demolition, to be fair. But you also have, like, this Sly Requisitioner,
mm-hmm.
which makes me interested. And then, like, most notably, you have these two Defiant Salvagers, which themselves are sacrifice outlets, right? You sacrifice yes. an artifact or a creature, and you put a +1/+1 counter on it. So I wonder if there's something to be said for, like... And I'd like it better if you had a few more... if you had a few more things that have Fabricate.
Yeah.
Which obviously, like, you're not going to have a ton because it's not this
Yeah, you set. Only get two packs of Kaladesh.
Exactly.
You know, that's true. Sometimes so you just have to get creative. So I kind of wonder
if, like, this deck might have been... Like, if you... Right? Sometimes if you don't have that...
Power.
If you don't have that power, you have to kind of say it like, well, what's something really stupid that I can do? Well, it's like maybe I try putting together Sly Requisition and like Sly Requisitioner and Defiant Salvager are cool because yeah. it's like you sacrifice something to put a counter on it and you get a servo and so then you can sacrifice the servo.
Yeah, maybe I should have got a little bit more creative. Or
you have a servo, you know. So I don't know. I feel like I probably wouldn't have done this initially. But hearing what you said about, like, oh, it's underwhelming.
Yeah.
Then it's like, that makes me a little bit more interested, especially since you have, like, Yeheni's expertise.
Right.
So it could be worth it, like, before you cast this, you sack all your stuff to your Defiant Salvagers so that they're out of range.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to cast Yeheni's expertise.
Yeah. And that's the thing sometimes with Sealed is if you can't put together something that you think is solid, you have to think outside the box a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I didn't do. So I could have potentially tried to rely on some neat combo pieces coming together or what people usually say is build an aggressive deck in that case. Yeah. But I also couldn't do that.
Yeah, you didn't have an aggressive deck in here. I don't know. Like if you got really crazy with this white, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know.
I agree. Actually, I could see if we're going like if we were going with that theme, like we would have to take out Aid from the Cowl.
Yeah.
But
and here's what I'll do.
I wonder if we could go with something like black white.
I'm going to post a picture of both of these pools.
Well, like even man these
those bandars?
These scrounging bandars because these can trigger revolt also.
Yeah. That's true. Those cat monkeys can do a lot.
Yeah, man.
I'll post pictures of both of these pools on our Twitter account, @MTAcast, which auto-posts to our Facebook /MTAcast. So you can take a look at these pools out there and let us know what you may have done.
Yeah.
Yeah, white black.
Interesting.
That's, you know, even white black is saying, I'm going to play every piece of removal.
Yeah, that you have. I mean, like, Sky Whaler Shot. Yeah. It was very, very good.
Is white black what I started with? And then I switched to white green? I can't remember. Maybe this is the one I started with. Or maybe it's the one I boarded into. I don't even remember. But yeah, it just was pretty poopy. But yeah, still.
Very interesting.
Still fun. And like I said, that Snek story happened and will happen again. So take there note. You go. Do you feel like you've revolted?
Yeah.
Flavortext Theater presents Movie Pitches.
That's right, everybody. It's time to crack open this very first pack of Aether Revolt.
Ooh, it's the first
And we're going to look at the titles. These are the names of these cards, and we're going to pitch you some movies based on them.
So far, we have yet to have one of these movies produced, which I think is a shame.
Really, it really is.
Because Megan has definitely pitched some winners, and I have pitched a lot of stinkers, but they could be made on a cheap budget.
I'm writing one of them.
Are you really? That?
Yeah, as a novel, though.
Because I remember one of them being really good.
It's probably the one that you remember.
Which one?
I'm not going to tell you right now.
No!
I'm not going to tell you right now because, like, it's, you know, I have, like, another project that I have to finish first.
Yeah.
But I have it, like.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. A real book was born from Flavor Text Theater.
Was born from Flavor Text Theater. At least one.
At least one. There's been a few good ones over the years.
Well, I say that because I definitely have another one written down, but I haven't, like, thought about it as hard. All right.
Okay, this movie is essentially, it's, I'm debating how political I want to get with this movie. Sure, this is a political movie. It was, I don't know what channel's running it or what, but basically it's set in the near future, so it's Donald under the Trump administration, and he has built the wall between us and Mexico. The entire country is impoverished because it took way more money than everybody assumed. Mexico wasn't going to pay for it. We ended up paying for it. It's huge and, you know, just like crazy robot eyes on it and everything. Oof. Anyway, there's a revolt, and people start literally breaking through the wall to get through to the other side. Barricade breaker to make a new life.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, like what the world really needs is another wall. It turned out so well for Germany.
I love that quote. What the world really needs is another wall.
All right. So true. This one is, do you know what? Sure. We'll just go for it.
Okay.
Since you made that one. This is a guy who, this is a film about a guy who, you know, lives in kind of like rural East. And he used to have a job mining coal.
Okay.
And then he lost that job, because, you know, they shut down the mine or whatever.
Yeah.
And, he was looking for, like, what was his next thing going to be. And it actually, like, for him, it was particularly difficult because he was born essentially with, like, this magical gift where he could withstand tons of heat and tons of pressure. And so he's basically like...
A human diamond.
Yeah, he's basically a human diamond. He's like, how am I going to put this gift to use? I can't just work in anything. And so he's like, oh, do you know what I need to do? If I were to, like, single-handedly build all of these, build big blacksmith places.
Yeah.
He's a foundry assembler.
Ah, that's so cool. The human diamond.
The human diamond.
Okay, this movie is one that's I've made just for me because I want to see it. It's in the Star Trek universe, and what we're examining this time is the history of Vulcan. So we're going back and seeing kind of how the religion was formed and how that has shaped who they are as a people coming up till today, and most importantly, where the Vulcan neck pinch came from and who discovered it. It's called Precise Strike.
Nice.
I don't know why that's the name of the movie, but I just really, somebody make that. I want to see it.
Okay, so this film is set back in the times of, like, not early physics, but, you know, physics has gone through lots of evolutions where they're trying to figure out, like, what is the universe made of? What is everything comprised of? So this is obviously, like, pre-Higgs boson. and even it's, like, you know, early, I think it's early 1900s, and it might even be late 1800s. I'm not precisely remembering my physics history right now. But the point is that back then that they thought that, there was this stuff called ether that was all around us, right?
Yes, yes.
And so there's this band of physicists who are all, you know, doing studies and making tests about ether, and the government is like, hey, we want in on this, as they always are. They're like, we want to weaponize this.
Yep.
And so they hire a set of physicists to learn how to poison not just the air but the ether, because they're worried about, like, interplanetary attacks, and they're like, well, if we could target it not just to our atmosphere but to, like, the stuff that's everywhere, then we could get a jump on, like, hostile alien races. It's called ether poisoner.
Oh, that's pretty good. This film is, like, kind of the young, younger, like this is maybe a Disney movie produced, but live action. So there's this girl named our hero. Her name is Allie, and she stumbles upon a science fair project, which she invents because she's a great scientist up and coming. And she invents a cloning machine. And of course, what happens is that she ends up cloning herself because she wants to go to soccer practice. She wants to do her homework. She wants to go to the basketball game. And but what she doesn't know is that with every iteration of her own clone, something is bad about them. So they're like rude to her little brother. One of them like spray paints on the school property and she's blamed for it. Another one spills the mom's spaghetti and laughs at her. Anyway, so she's just like, this is really bad. And they all start to turn on her once they find out she's the maker and wants to get rid of them. And they chase her through the city trying to get her. And she has to dodge them for, you know, the action sequence of the movie. The last third, it's called Alley Evasion. Because she's being chased by a lot of alleys.
Hold on, I'm writing this down.
This is, as I said it, I was pretty sure that it's already been made. Like, I was fairly positive. What? There's that movie where it's, I can see the poster, where it's a guy, and it's called, like, Duplicity or something. And he's holding, like, he's dancing with a woman, but it's, like, 10 of him. I don't know.
Okay, so I have... Sorry, I was like clicking on. I have so many different documents of like different
story crap ideas
that I've like tried to remember.
Yeah.
Oh no, where did it go? Now the one that I wanted to read from you. So one of them was like just. one of them is me writing like Onion or Reductress style headlines.
Nice.
And I was just like so pleased with the with the last one that was on the list that I saw.
What was it?
12 books that will help men quietly fetishize your reading habits. Like, that's really good.
If you don't email that to them, I don't even know what I'm going to do. That is so good.
Oh my God. Anyways. I'm really, now I have to go back and find that document, like, write that, like, this is the problem. I have so many Google Docs that I open and then I'll just, like, type a random thought into them and then I'll, like, close it again. And they're all just titled, like, idea.
Idea. Search. Oh, anyways. No. 50 of them.
Okay, so this film is about a, it starts when the main character, this kid, is young, obviously, and his father is a champion boxer.
Sweet.
And his dad, like, is in a pretty, like, terrible, like, boxing match where he gets pretty, like, so badly injured that he can never box again, right? He's done with it.
Could this be in the Rocky franchise?
It probably could. Okay. I haven't seen Rocky or any of them.
Me either.
So I might be describing one of the Rocky films as I talk about this. Okay, but, so his dad is instead like, I'm going to become a coach, and obviously he turns to coaching his kid, but he's so hard trying to relive his glory days. That obviously he just pushes his kid way too hard. And his kid just like gets trapped in this mentality of like, I have to be an amazing boxer. What are all these things that an amazing boxer does? It's called prize fighter construct.
Oh, but what happens in the end?
Oh, man, I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay. This movie.
Somebody dies.
Our movies are really light today. They're kind of Kaladesh inspired, actually.
Alley Evasion is totally like a kid's comedy.
Okay, this movie is set in a post-apocalyptic hellscape, which is my favorite place for a movie. And what it is that there's four bridges in this city state, and one crosses over to where you work, one crosses over to where you live, one crosses over to where you die, and the fourth one crosses over to paradise, right? But that one you can never cross because of all of the horrible dystopian hellscape things that they put in the way, like the government and all these sorts of things.
But
it is one young girl's mission to cross the fourth bridge and bring her family with her. And of course, she has to cross the first three to get to the fourth. So she has to cross to the work, and she has to work in some horrible job. The living one where she has to live on her own. The death one where she has to go through the pits of hell. And finally, the fourth bridge. Can she cross it? It's called Fourth Bridge Prowler.
Nice. Nice. All right. Do you want to just keep going with the theme of like really dark stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So there's this, we'll go again. There's this young girl and she's apprenticed to a to basically like a sorcerer.
Yeah.
This is like an, obviously in like a high fantasy type situation.
Okay.
And the sorcerer has a tool that they have stashed away. Right. And like the girl does not know why. It's pretty veiled in secrecy because the sorcerer has been alive for a long time.
Yeah.
He took this thing away a very long time ago from like from people essentially.
Cause it was too powerful for them to have.
Yeah. So, right. It was basically like a for your own good. I have taken this thing away. But she like, so she, you know, lives with her family, but then she's apprenticed to this sorcerer. And she goes home to her family, and her brother, who has like read all about this tool, is like, you have to get it. It's there. I know it is. And she's like, no, it's not. But eventually he convinces her because it's her older brother, right? And older brothers are, you know, weasels.
Never had one, unfortunately. Or fortunately?
I mean, they're weasels. Okay. You tell me.
All right.
So anyways, she eventually does. She's like, okay, do you know what? You've convinced me. I will steal this tool. Ooh. He convinces her that it's like for everybody's good and everything.
Yeah.
And she brings it back. And it turns out that what it does is like it's this tool that promises to make the bearer of it perfect. Like absolutely perfect. But it turns out that anyone who holds it is actually just driven to succeed. So much so that they end up dying in the effort, right? Like, it's never enough. It turns out that perfection is not attainable at all.
Yeah.
And they're never going to attain it. And whoever owns it actually just dies in pursuit of the being a perfect person.
Oh, shit.
Terrible things ensue. Everybody dies. Implement of improvement.
I gotta say, the stories are actually better than their titles this week.
They are. I feel pretty good about them.
What, did you get a good one? Don't tell me.
I
can't. Okay, save it.
Yeah.
Save it. Oh, God. All right. So this movie is along the veins of everything that we've encountered so far.
Uh-huh.
There's some kind of corrupt government and people are rebelling against it. And there is one young member of the rebellion. I'm probably just telling the story of Star Wars. And he gets corrupted over to the dark side. And then he realizes once he's in power that everything that he loved is dead, vengeful rebel. Yep, that's Star Wars. Nice.
Yep,
never mind.
Yep, yep. That was the alternate. That was the working title. Yeah. The first script. Okay, this one is about a guy who works in basically like, you know, like, again, a giant industrial forge type situation.
Yeah.
So he and the other people that work there are just like all day toiling. But they're all also from like a race that was, or like a set of people that was, that have been specifically cultivated to work there.
Oh, sick.
And so they're super strong.
Yeah.
They're essentially like superhuman in strength. So even when they're done working all day, they're not tired. Mm. And it's almost to the point of driving them crazy, right?
Ooh,
like
that's
they
sick.
Don't
I
have
like
enough
it.
Outlet for what
yeah.
for what they're doing. And so at the end of the day, they all go to like these giant fighting rings. And they basically all they like melee fight. And it's about one guy who melee fights. And eventually, you know, it helps him realize that if they're all fighting each other,
they can all
like
fight.
So the fighting pits were specifically built by the people who wanted to keep them just working there all the time so that they were fighting each other. And he was like, wait, if we stop fighting each other, then we can turn all this massive strength into fighting the people who put us here in the first place. It's called Sweatworks Brawler.
I am watching that movie. That movie is a critical success already. I already can see it. I can see it. Oh, okay. This movie is going to break the mold because it's going to star somebody famous.
Uh-huh.
But basically, it's a rollicking comedy about what would happen if on a vessel to Antarctica, Drake was there.
Oh, God.
And it's called Hinterland Drake.
I'm already upset.
The end. Okay.
I'm not going to make a movie,
okay.
But I think it's important to note before I say it that like these cards all go to a randomly drawn Patreon subscriber at the end of the month.
Oh my gosh.
Which could be you. And the rare, the mythic rare in this pack is a Johnny Unyielding. So he is going to go in this pile of cards, you guys.
Wow.
Look at him.
He looks great.
How did his shoulders get so big?
I mean, with abs like that, you can't have small shoulders.
That's why he has to have abs like that because he has shoulders.
Yeah,
that
that's
look
true
like
to
this.
Hold those puppies yeah. up. Yeah, a Johnny Unyielding. This could be in a deck, no problem. Yeah. So head over to Patreon. Any donation level will get you entered
a chance
in this.
At this sucker.
Whew, that is pretty cool.
Nice.
Well, everybody, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
That's right.
Just gonna look at
thank
Johnny
you
a
one
more
time to everyone who subscribes on Patreon for making our show possible. It really does mean the world to us. Also, if you subscribe this month, you will be entered in a drawing for a playmat as well. I have we're giving away the one from GP Atlanta this month.
Yeah.
Which is, oh gosh, which one is it? It's really pretty. And I remember it's looking over the city and it's like, really gold.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember which one it is right now. It's the top of my head. Gosh darn it. It's really pretty. You can look it up.
City.
Exactly. So that will be there, as well as cards that we open in Flavor Text Theater to anyone subscribed on Patreon, not just new people this month, including Lisa Johnny.
All for all time. And thank you again to our sponsor, Card Kingdom, who always has our back and have always provided great customer service and had everything at perfectly wonderful prices on their website. Really easy to use. CardKingdom.com/MTAcast. We love them and you should too.
Yeah.
So, next week, man, I don't even know what's going to happen next week. We're going to have our first draft.
It's going to be crazy.
Oh, so tune in for more of this, you know, this is
shenanigans.
Your alley.